Let's go, Violet urges as she slams her locker shut. When she sees me filming, she immediately flashes a brilliant smile. Violet is always camera ready. I don't want to get stuck in the front of the bus with the chaperones. I play my part from behind the lens. You are way too peppy for this early in the morning. We're out of school. The weather is gorgeous, and we get to hang outside, going on rides all day. She's saying what the entire class thinks. Everyone except for me, because, number one, I don't want to puke. Number two, I want to avoid Phil. Violet practically breaks into a run once we're outside. I scurry to keep up, but worry these shots will look like I filmed during an earthquake. Look, there's three buses, and Phil's probably going to ride with the jocks, so it should be easy to avoid him. And once we get there, we'll steer clear. She knows exactly what's on my mind. She turns to face my lens, eyes sparkling. The entire glorious purpose of today is to gorge ourselves on fried foods and experience vomit-worthy G-forces. There's Monica and the boys. She waves and walks in their direction, forcing me to follow. I stand a little apart so I can capture a medium shot. I'm on the perimeter, the observer as always. Sometimes it feels a little lonely, but at least it's on my terms. Violet hugs Monica, who lets go of Justin's hand to return the embrace, like it's been months since they've seen each other and not just yesterday. Violet turns to fist bump Justin while Monica adjusts her skirt. There are probably only a handful of girls in our class who would dare to wear something so short. And yes, Violet is another one of them. Mike steps forward, arms slightly extended to try and hug Violet, but she is clearly going for the fist bump and ends up punching him in the shoulder. Awkward, but oh so perfect on film. Mike blushes. Poor Mike. He's my male blushing counterpart. He shakes his head when Violet and Monica turn to head for the bus. I can tell Justin is trying to stifle his laughter. He pats Mike on the back and leads him away. I pan the camera from left to right, capturing the entire class as they mill around and start to pile into the buses. There's this iconic quality to this scene, like it could have been the same 30 years ago. Kids in the school parking lot, American flag fluttering atop a metal pole, cornfields in the distance, blue skies. Everything is such a mess, and I can't wait to graduate, but I still feel this twinge of nostalgia for my time at Batavia High School as it draws to a close. Brian appears in my frame. He's staring at me from across the parking lot. I stop short and drop my camera to my side. I guess his suspension is over. For a second, I don't recognize him. He's shaved his head. He's wearing fatigues and an army green T-shirt. There are dog tags around his neck. Josh and Brandon, his constant companions from the football team, are standing next to him, oblivious, laughing and talking like everything is totally normal. It's not cold out, but I rub my upper arms. He doesn't drop his eyes from mine. Finally, I look away and head toward Violet and Monica, who are happily chatting by the third bus. Violet and Monica smile as I approach, but when they see my face, they know something is wrong. Violet shrugs her shoulders up in a question. I whisper, "Brian," and then subtly point in his direction, making sure he can't see me. Violet sneers. Ignore him. He'll be on the bus with the other football players anyway. Monica nods in agreement. They're right. I take a breath and start filming again. I don't get it. Boys are always wondering why girls go to the bathroom in groups, and yet the entire football team travels in a pack, even off-season. Monica observes, and Phil's the alpha. I don't see Phil anywhere. When I was panning the crowd, I searched for his face. I don't say it, but I'm disappointed not to see him. Even after last night's drive-by fiasco, my crush still burns bright. We pile into the third bus. Justin and Mike snagged seats early and are waving at us from the back. Violet grabs a window seat, and Monica scoots in next to her, across from Mike and Justin. I slip into the seat in front of Monica and Violet, then get up on my knees and pivot around to film my establishing shots. Students pair off and take their seats. Sun pours in the windows on the right side of the bus and casts splotches of light on people's hair and faces. Through my lens, for a moment, this worn-down old bus is beautiful. I zoom in on a couple whispering to each other. The boy tucks the girl's hair behind her ear, and Phil steps into the shot, and he takes up my whole frame.
Mind if I take that seat?
You're not on the jock bus? Monica pipes up from behind me. She asks what we're all thinking. Phil shakes his head just slightly, not taking his eyes from my lens. I lower the camera and nod. While Phil eases into the spot next to me, I throw a quick, wide-eyed glance at Violet and Monica, clear my throat, and brush the hair out of my face. I'm not sure if I'm breathing, so I remind myself to do so. I can barely look him in the eye. Hey.
Hey.
Phil says, as he taps his thumb on his jeans to an imaginary rhythm. I close my eyes. My brain is a tempest. I can't decipher a single coherent thought. It feels like forever since Phil and I have been so close. I've tried to forget how good he smells and how the curves of his biceps extend beyond the short sleeves of his shirt. I've tried to erase his simple, factual hotness. It's all been a failure. He places his left hand on the edge of the seat, an inch away from my knee. Heat radiates off him. Hey, I say for the second time, and bring my hand to rest on my knee. The space between us grows painfully small, but it might as well be the Grand Canyon.
Hey,
Phil repeats, and then laughs.
I guess we've covered the hellos.
We're experts at establishing each other's presence. I bite my lower lip. Either Violet or Monica knees the back of my seat. My money's on Violet.
Haven't talked in a while.
No. Well, it's kind of been chaos on my end, what with the death threats and frantic mother.
I'm so sorry about everything that's happened to you and your folks. It's unreal.
My mom's still totally freaked.
She's probably worried. It's parental.
She has the overprotective, suffocating mother skill down to a science. Phil chuckles. I cast a sidelong glance at his face and the incredibly delicious dimple that every smile of his reveals.
You'll be out from under her grasp pretty soon.
Not as far as I'd like.
New York is pretty far.
I won't be in New York. Phil half turns his torso toward me.
I thought they were cool with you going.
Were. Emphasis on the past tense. When I said my mom lost it after the death threat, she totally tightened the screws on me. My parents won't let me go to NYU anymore because they're too scared something will happen to me out there.
Maya, that sucks. I'm sorry. Is there anything?
No. Trust me. Do you mind if we change the subject? I'm sick of everyone apologizing, and even more tired of trying to convince everyone that it's going to be okay. It's not going to be okay. But there's nothing anyone can do to make it, my life, better. Phil has no immediate response. I stare out the window, twirling strands of hair around my finger. I'm sure he can hear my heart pounding in my chest. He drops his head and lowers his voice, so I have to lean in to hear.
Can I ask you a question?
Please don't, is what I want to say. I'm content to simply sit next to him in silence, the air between us still crackling with possibility. But Phil is going to ask, and I know I have to answer.
I was out at the pond Saturday night. When I was walking by the garden, I saw a car pull up on the gravel. Was that you?
Phil turns to look at me. His eyes are so soft, it kills me. Our faces are close, near enough that the soft exhalations of his breath caress my skin. I can end this conversation if I can muster the courage to arc my body into his, bring my lips to his mouth, let our bodies align while the rest of the world falls away. But if that girl exists inside me, I fail to coax her out from hiding. It was... sorry.
Don't be sorry.
Phil whispers in my ear.
Why did you tear out of there? You saw my car, right?
I didn't want to disturb you. I know it's your spot. I should never... I'm sorry. I was presumptuous. I long for grace under pressure, but I simply can't conjure it.
It's fine.
Phil says in a voice so gentle and kind, I might cry. The tips of his fingers graze my jeans, searing imaginary marks on my skin.
I took you there because I wanted to show it to you. Besides, I don't own it or anything.
You're kind of squatting, though. Phil grins.
I'm so edgy. But didn't you want to at least say hi?
I thought you might be there with someone else. My cheeks redden.
Who?
I keep my voice low. Phil's making me spell it out one painful, humiliating syllable at a time. Lisa... I thought maybe you were there with her, and I didn't want to be in the way.
I told you I've never taken her there. I've never taken anyone there but you.
The earth stops spinning. I raise my eyes to his. I shouldn't speak. If I don't speak, this moment will exist, preserved in the amber of my memory forever, exactly perfect. I do speak, though, because when have I ever been silent? Then why have you been avoiding me?
I've been avoiding you?
Phil looks at me like I'm speaking in tongues. I nod.
I tried talking to you. I wanted to. I thought maybe you didn't want to have anything to do with me after that crap with Lisa's friends. And last week, when I was talking to you, the dean came in with that cop. I texted you and didn't hear back.
I take a long, slow breath. I guess... I couldn't deal with the drama. And Lisa seemed happy. Like you two were back together. Phil looks into my eyes. I don't turn away.
I was trying to be a friend, and she took it the wrong way. Apparently, subtlety is not my thing.
So you're not back with...
No.
Phil grazes my shoulder with his. I let my hand rest on his forearm. The bus stops. Phil slides out of his seat.
I'll talk to you later.
I smile. It's my first truly spontaneous smile since the bombing. It feels good to know I can still smile like that.
True Crime TV Profile, American Terrorist. The authorities are still piecing together the scraps of what appears to be the tragic and broken life of America's homegrown suicide bomber, Ethan Branson. Here's what we do know about this deeply disturbed young man. The FBI raid on the motel room that Branson stayed in the night before the bombing yielded only a handful of items. A copy of Timothy McVeigh's letter to Fox News, written in 2001, shortly before his execution, and a novel that is said to have inspired McVeigh's actions, the Turner Diaries. The diaries describe a violent Aryan revolution in the United States that overthrows the government and seeks to take over the world. The FBI also found an envelope placed squarely on the otherwise empty motel room desk. The standard inspections for trace elements of toxic substances came back negative, and the only fingerprints appear to be those of Branson. It was Branson's last letter to the world. Two brief sentences in his scratchy handwriting. Tell my mother I died for my country. I did what I thought was best. John Wilkes Booth.
Chapter 18. Optimism is a funny thing. I swear I'm walking on clouds. After lunch, I duck out of more roller coasters because I've had enough G-forces for one day, thank you very much. Also because all through lunch, Phil was smiling at me from across the food court, and I was smiling back, and I'm secretly hoping that he ditches his friends to come find me. Of course, it's not so secret, because Violet made sure to announce aloud, "See you, Maya! Have fun filming by yourself!" as she left the food court with Monica and the boys. Real subtle-like. I'm glad she did. I'm still wearing my post-Phil conversation smile as I film the park before I head back to the deserted food court. There's a drinking fountain and bathrooms in a small courtyard surrounded by a hedgerow. When I walk out of the bathroom, I blink against the sun's brilliance, but I know I'm glowing from the inside. I turn my camera on again. Walking up the path, I film the light dancing on the brick wall outside of the bathrooms.
What are you smiling at?
Brian snarls at me as I step into the front courtyard. The light falls from the bricks. It falls from everything. I lower my camera, grasp it tightly in my right hand, keeping it running. Nothing. The light and... I look left and right. Josh and Brandon stand a few feet behind Brian, flanking him, effectively cutting off my only exit. If they weren't with Brian, I probably would have walked right by them. They both have these expressions that look more clueless than menacing. Sort of blank, I guess. They haven't joined Brian in his shaved head and fatigues look, but clearly they're along for the ride. I swallow and try not to let fear consume me. Think. Be cool. Figure it out. A hard pit forms in my stomach. I need to get out of here. Are you guys having fun? I try to make my voice sound confident, but it squeaks out of me. I'm buying time, hoping someone passes by. Brian looks at Josh and Brandon. They laugh.
Fun's about to start,
he says. He turns back to me. In that moment, I see what happened. Brian snapped after the bombing. It's more than the creepiness I felt when Phil and I ran into him at the bookstore. It's the eyes. I've never seen his eyes so cold and dead. His hands tremble. He's amped up, jittery. I take a step toward my right, looking over their shoulders, past the entrance to the courtyard and the park beyond. I don't see anyone, but all I need to do is walk a few feet, and maybe I could make a run for it. Brian steps in front of me, closer now, menacing. He cuts off my path. The world around me comes into deep focus. My heart pounds in my ears, and each hair on my arm rises in warning. Tiny leaves on the hedges ripple individually, distinctly in my peripheral vision. Beads of sweat form at Brian's hairline, and one trickles down the side of his face. I can hear the entire cycle of his breath. Inhalation, exhalation. His face tightens into a scowl.
Where do you think you're going?
I'm meeting back up with Violet and Monica and everyone. They should be in the food court any second.
I lie, trying not to let my inner frenzy bleed into my voice.
Breathe, I remind myself. Talk your way out of it. But my lips are frozen, and my body is leaden, as if Earth's gravity has tripled in the very spot I'm standing.
Doubt it.
Brandon speaks for the first time.
Justin and Monica are making out by the kiddie rides.
Brian's stare is unwavering. He chuckles.
You know, Maya, you really are a tremendous pain in the ass.
I hover between fear and rage. I clench my left hand in a fist. My right grips my camera even tighter. Back off, Brian.
Back off?
Brian and his friends laugh.
Pretty ballsy for someone who's cornered.
Look. I take a tiny, hesitant step back as Brian moves closer to me. I'm sorry you got suspended. I didn't ask for that.
And I didn't ask you to come to our country.
But I was born here. I let my voice fade. There is no point in responding or trying to be reasonable. It's safer if I keep my mouth shut. Every muscle in my body twitches. I'm afraid my knees will buckle.
I don't give a fuck where you were born.
Brian's face twists in anger.
My brother lost his leg in Iraq because of you people.
I shake my head. I can see his pain. My breaths are short and fast. I'm sorry that happened to him. I whisper. And I am.
Yeah, you'll be sorry.
The veins in Brian's neck bulge. He steps closer to me, his beady eyes in my face. Then he seizes my right arm, hard. Ow! I scream. Let go of me! I squirm, trying to get out of his grasp. Fear turns to panic. He squeezes my upper arm tighter. His grip is a vice. My hands tingle, but I hold onto my camera like it's a lifeline.
Come on, Brian. You said you wanted to scare her,
Josh says. Brian doesn't turn his gaze from me.
Now you're hurting her.
I catch the shadow that passes over Josh's face. He's wavering. It gives me the tiniest speck of hope that this could still end here.
That's the point. She has to pay.
Brian spits back. If Brian has doubts, his face doesn't betray them.
This is bullshit. I'm out of here, man.
Josh slinks out of the courtyard. I turn to Brandon, wide-eyed, pleading. He lowers his head and hurries after his friend. I'm alone now. Brian, please. You don't want to do this. Hot tears splash down my cheeks. I want to scream, but I can't hear my voice anymore, and I have no idea if any sound escapes my mouth.
Yes, I do. I want to hurt you.
I look beyond Brian. If I can break his grip, I can make a run for it. It's a few feet. If only... Brian yanks me closer to him. He grabs my face and squeezes my cheek so I can't speak. The ground pushes up against my feet, compelling me to move. I kick Brian in the shin.
You bitch.
He slaps me and throws me to the ground. I hear a crack as my left elbow slams into the pavement. I taste blood. Brian's handprint stings my skin. I try to push myself up. Brian stomps on my left thigh. I scream as pain pierces to the bone. He clenches his right fist above me. I raise an arm to shield myself. I'm frozen until Brian stumbles forward, pushed from behind. Phil! When Brian turns around, Phil punches him in the stomach. Brian clutches his front with one hand and swings wildly at Phil with his other. Phil strikes Brian's face. Blood spurts from Brian's nose and mouth as he falls backward to the ground, groaning. Phil looms over him.
I should have done this a long time ago, he says, raising his right fist to punch Brian again.
Stop! I yell. Phil eases himself back, breathing hard, his eyes fixed on Brian, who covers his face with his hands, blood dripping between his fingers. Finally, Phil turns to me. His jaw slackens. The rage in his eyes is replaced with worry. I'm still on the ground, clutching my knees and sobbing. He kneels, wraps his arms around me, and speaks softly.
Maya, are you okay? Are you hurt?
My arm. Where did you come from? Holding me to his chest, he strokes my hair and kisses the top of my head. I cry into his shirt. My entire body shakes. The frames in my mind fast forward, rewind, fast forward without pause, and it's all out of focus. I'm not sure how much time passes, seconds or minutes. When I finally look up, the courtyard is a jumble of people and voices. I see the dean and Ms. Jensen with Josh. Violet rushes into the courtyard with Mike and is followed by staff from the park. It's all spinning with me at the very center, trying to hold on. Phil makes space for Violet, who crouches beside me, her eyes crinkled with concern. Can you help me get up? I ask. I want to go wash my face in the bathroom. Sure, honey. Violet helps me stand up. I hold my left elbow close to my body, my right hand still fastened around the mini camcorder. I limp over. My leg throbs, every muscle coiled, wound too tight. In the bathroom, I clutch the edge of the sink, trying to balance myself. Violet places a comforting hand on my upper back.
Try splashing cold water on your face. That might help.
I hand Violet my camera and do as she suggests, wincing as I move my left arm. I dry off and breathe deeply a few times. My fingers shake, but it's hard to believe that this is real. I caught part of it on camera, I say. What? I mean, my camera was running the whole time. I'm not sure what the picture looks like, but I probably got the sound.
At least you'll have evidence.
For what? If Brian lies, He assaulted you. You can press charges. And, you know, with him maybe being involved in the incident at your parents' office and the whole hate crime thing, he could be in serious trouble. I hadn't thought of... I don't want to tell my parents.
Maya, that's not an option, Violet says. You're limping. Your left arm is swelling up. You need to go to the hospital. The Deans probably called your parents already.
In the distance, I hear sirens. The little courtyard bursts with people. Just beyond the hedgerow, park security guards are talking to Dean Anderson. One of them barks at the buzzing crowd outside.
Make some room, people!
A police car pulls up, trailed by two ambulances. Blue and red lights splash across the pavement. God, one of those ambulances is for me. Violet helps me hobble out to the center of the courtyard. I strain to look for Phil, but I don't see him in the crowd. Justin, Monica, and Mike rush up to us, full of questions. I look at Violet and slowly shake my head. She pulls our friends to the side and gives them the story so I don't have to. I watch the flurry from outside myself. I'm inside the plane of focus, sharp and defined and totally still. All around me, my friends, the cops, they're out of the plane. A blur, a fast-moving spiral. It's dizzying. I see Phil, and everything stops. He's talking to a policeman who is writing things down in a spiral notebook. Two EMTs help Brian onto a stretcher. He's holding an ice pack to his nose. I know it's horrible, but I want him to be in pain. I want him to disappear off the face of the earth. When they move him away, I see splotches of blood on the ground. Violet reappears at my side as the dean escorts an EMT over to us.
Maya, this is Rachel. She's going to examine your arm and leg and see if you have any other injuries. And the police will need to talk to you as well.
That can wait till we get to the ER, Rachel says. The hospital? But I whisper. I don't want to go to the hospital, but like everything else lately, it's out of my hands.
I've notified your parents,
Dean Anderson adds.
They'll meet us at Community General.
The dam bursts on my river of denial.
Can I ride with her in the ambulance? Violet asks.
Fine with us, the EMT says, and looks to the dean, who nods. The EMT gestures for us to follow her. Violet takes my good elbow. I search for Phil's face again. Did I thank him? I have to thank him. I can't find him anywhere.
Watch your head, Rachel says, as she helps me step into the back of the ambulance.
Another EMT joins her. They put an ice pack on my swollen, bruised arm, take my blood pressure and heart rate, and examine my leg.
Violet, where's Phil? Can you check?
I'm worried. Why has he disappeared?
Back in a flash.
Is he the young man who stepped in? Rachel asks while scrutinizing my injuries.
Yeah.
Brave kid. He your boyfriend?
I shake my head no. The EMTs wrap up, ready to take me to the hospital against my wishes. Violet ducks back into the ambulance and sits down, but doesn't look me in the eye.
Did you find him? I ask.
Not exactly,
Violet says in an uncharacteristic whisper.
What do you mean?
He's with the police. They're charging him with assault.
The little boy with dark curls knows how to make himself invisible. One rainy day, with his mother shut in her room, he occupies himself bouncing a ball against the living room wall. He hears his mother's rhythmic prayers from behind her closed door, and he loses himself in her voice and the soft thud of the rubber ball against the wall. Startled when he hears the front door slam, he misses the ball and watches it bounce in slow motion as it knocks down a small vase full of fake flowers that his mother keeps on the end table. Too late to disappear. "Damn it, I've told you a million times not to play in the house. You're going to pay for that, boy," the man yells as he loosens his belt and wraps it a couple times around his hand to get a tight grip. The mother runs out of her room, pleading. The boy takes the first blow, standing up, and then falls to the ground, hoping playing dead will make the man stop. But he forgets to cover his head, and the buckle strikes hair and skin and bone. Chapter 19
Maya, Vita!
I hear my mother's voice before my parents even enter the curtained-off examination area. My father looks grim. My mother immediately bursts into tears upon seeing me. She clutches me in a death grip.
"Mom, I'm okay, but you're hurting me," I say, trying to nudge her away.
I study my parents. They look beleaguered. It's like they've aged another decade since this morning. My mom's face is completely ashen. I have a strong urge to move and let her lie down in my place. My doctor walks back in, saving me from a parental conversation that might be even more painful than my elbow. He details my various injuries: hairline fracture in my left elbow, a deep contusion in my thigh, and various other minor bruises and scrapes. My mother rubs her temples, and while the doctor outlines what he expects to be a quick recovery process, Dean Anderson enters, along with one of the police officers that I saw talking to Phil. Chief Wickham from the Batavia PD follows. They shake hands with my dad and nod at my mother. We all stare at one another. Chief Wickham disrupts the charged silence.
"Maya, this is Officer Russell. He is with the county sheriff's office. He wants to ask you a few questions. The amusement park is in his jurisdiction, but he's letting me sit in because of the ongoing investigation with the incident at your parents' office. Are you up to it?"
I nod, my throat too dry to speak. Officer Russell steps forward. He's shorter than Chief Wickham, more barrel-chested. When he smiles, it's natural, friendly, not like the chief, whose smile feels like he watched a YouTube tutorial on how to seem friendly. I answer Officer Russell's questions. The memory feels fuzzy, like I'm looking through a soft focus filter, but I give him every detail I can remember about what Brian did. But then Officer Russell starts asking me about Phil. When he arrived, what he said, how many times he hit Brian. Then he uses the word assault. And it's not Brian he's accusing. "Phil didn't assault anyone. He prevented Brian from hurting me. More." I shouldn't have to say this, and it makes me feel sick that I have to.
"Unfortunately, Brian has a different story."
Officer Russell looks at me.
"He claims you two simply exchanged words and that you were injured in the scuffle with Phil. So we're looking at two possible assaults."
"He's lying!" I want to scream, but my voice is a scratch.
"We'll sort it out. But for now, it's your word and Phil's word against his."
"Wait! My camera! I almost forgot! I had it recording the whole time. There's probably no decent picture, but I'm sure I got audio." Officer Russell nods.
"That could help us get all of this straightened out."
"And my daughter's safety?" my mom asks. "When she goes to school? Who is going to be protecting her from this?
Both of the young men will be suspended from school and—
Both? Why is Phil suspended? That's not fair. I start rising out of my bed, but my father places a gentle hand on my shoulder.
Fighting has consequences. It's school policy.
But Phil didn't pick the fight.
Maya, let the dean decide what is or isn't fair,
my father says. I collapse back against the pillows.
We'll take a look at any footage you might have caught, miss, and share it with the DA's office,
Officer Russell says. I motion at my mom, and she pulls the camera out of my bag and hands it over.
The county will be working with Batavia on this, so I'll make sure it's returned to you, Maya,
Chief Wickham promises. The policemen leave, but Dean Anderson hesitates at the door.
I don't expect to see you at school tomorrow either, Maya. Take as much time as you need. Stay at home and rest up. Get a little TLC from your parents. Doctor and Dr. Aziz, I know how frightening this must be for you. You have my assurances that we will do everything in our power to ensure that Maya is safe at school.
Tears well in my eyes. My head pounds. I barely hear the doctor give my parents my at-home care instructions. A sling, a prescription, and physical therapy starting next week. Back home, I half-hug my mom and then shut my door. I pull down the blinds and draw the curtains. Using only my right hand, I brush, splash water on my face, and fumble strip down to my underwear, leave my clothes in a pile on the floor, and climb into bed, cell phone in hand. I dial Phil's number. I don't want to text. I want to talk to him. I get his voicemail. Phil? It's me. Maya. My voice is raspy. I wanted to make sure. Are you okay? I'm so sorry. I gave the police my camera. I got footage of Brian cornering me. It should help explain how you helped me. I don't know what else to say, except thanks. I let my phone drop to the floor and curl up under the duvet on my bed. It's warm outside, but I'm cold and numb. Even under the covers, I shiver. Sleep pulls at me. I'm fatigued to my bones, but I fight my heavy eyelids for 1 second more. Images from the day animate themselves, jumbling in my vision. The shrieks and sharp turns of a roller coaster. The slits of Brian's eyes as he glowers over me. Phil punching Brian. Bright red drops of Brian's blood falling to the pavement. The purple and black of my swelling arm. The barely there sensation of Phil's fingertips on my leg. The dimple in his smiling cheek. Phil holding me in his arms, stroking my hair.
Beta, wake up! You're dreaming!
My eyes flicker open to my mother's face, leaning over the bed. The curtains are drawn, and light streams into my room.
What happened?
To my ears, my voice sounds gravelly and low. I clear my throat.
A nightmare? You were screaming, my mother says.
Her face as gray and voice as unnerved as it was last night. Maybe more. She hasn't slept at all.
Was it about that boy who did this to you?
I blink the sleep out of my eyes and look at my mother.
No. It was one of those djinn stories that I heard in India.
My mom nods, willing to accept the fib, if only to lessen her own worry.
What time is it?
I rub my face with my palms, still groggy.
It's almost 12:30, my mom says,
coming to stand at the foot of my bed.
What? I've been asleep since... How can I still be tired?
It's from the pain medication.
Do your arm and leg hurt very much?
A fresh wave of panic crosses her face as she asks me.
Not really.
I lie again.
Where's Dad?
He went to the office on his own. The patient load isn't too big today.
Mom, you could have gone.
How can I leave you like this, alone in the house?
I'm not a baby.
You are still our daughter, and after yesterday...
Oh, my Beta, if anything would have happened...
She starts crying. Again.
A part of me feels like I should console her, tell her it will be okay, that I'll be okay. But I'm not even sure I can convince myself of that right now. And honestly, I just want to be alone.
Mom?
Mom?
I'm hungry. Can you make me something to eat, please? With the mention of food, my mom perks up. She hurries out and downstairs to the kitchen. I almost manage to get through the omelet she prepares without a word. Almost.
Violet called this morning while you were asleep. She was so worried about you. She said she will check on you after school.
I nod, shoving the rest of the food into my mouth and dropping my fork on my plate. I wince with the pain. The medicine dulled the ache, but it's still there. My elbow screams at me whenever I forget. I'm not in a chatty mood. I'm not much in the mood for anything. My mom doesn't get the hint.
I want to talk to you.
Your father and I were discussing this last night, and we want to drive you to school and pick you up. We'll adjust our patient schedules so it won't be a problem, and you can study in the back office of the clinic until we finish for the day.
I shake my head. I can't go to the clinic with you every day. I have work and...
I pause to catch my breath.
You will have to quit your job.
I'm not quitting anything.
Don't be ridiculous.
If you want to buy something, we can give you the money. That's not the point. I love working at the idle hour. Anna and Richard count on me. It's part of my life. And I won't let you take that away from me, too.
She steps toward me.
You talk like our home is a prison.
Haven't we always let you have what you want?
My mom's magical thinking allows her to believe that I have total autonomy over my life. My exasperation boils over. Everything in my life is a fight right now, and it's exhausting. My parents' fears shrink my universe to the four walls of this house. The world outside paints us all as terrorists. I'm blamed for events that have nothing to do with me. And all I want is to make movies and kiss a boy.
My mother sits down across the table.
Try to understand, Beta. What happened to you yesterday was serious. God forbid. It could have been worse. And it's too dangerous for you to be alone. When your father comes home, we will discuss the plans for next year.
I thought everything was settled for Chicago and living with Hina.
The option I protested vehemently against is now my only lifeline to freedom.
Your father is thinking maybe we should reconsider and have you stay at home.
I rise from my chair.
Stay at home? And go where? To community college?
Before she can answer, I run to my room and slam the door. Fury twists me into knots. I press my fractured elbow, grimacing through the pain, then grip it harder still to see how much I can bear. The phone rings. Moments later, my mom shuffles to my door. There's a quiet knock. Usually she barges in, but I know that in this instant she doesn't dare. She's too afraid of setting me off.
Maya, open the door and talk to me like a normal person.
I'm changing,
I lie. Your dad called. I need to go in. Emergency tooth extraction. Will you be okay?
I can manage.
If you need anything,
I'll call and you'll rush right home.
My mom bites her tongue on the other side of the door. It's a sea change. An ominous one.
I hear her deliberate and heavy steps as she walks away and down the stairs. There has to be a clever way to turn the tide, but to my besieged brain, there's only one way out. The front door.
I stare at the ceiling, my neurons on rapid fire.
Later, I text Violet, telling her I need rest, and we'll see her tomorrow.
I call my dad's cell.
I know my mom is with a patient, so this is my best shot.
Dad?
Yeah, everything's good. Listen, I'm going to spend the night at Violet's. It'll be fine.
Yes. Her dad's there.
I want to relax a little, to take my mind off things, and I don't want to fight with you guys anymore. I'll call you tomorrow, okay?
Thanks, Dad.
Kudafiz.
I slip the phone into my pocket. I smile, a plan taking seed.
World News Today interview. Charles Richmond, Branson family neighbor. Ethan was a quiet kid. You'd see him playing in the yard and so forth, usually alone. Always looked kinda blank. Felt sorry for him with a dad like that. You'd hear him shouting at the boy and his mom, stumbling from the car to the door, drunk. Never seen a man so full of hate. One time, it was fall, I guess Ethan was late coming home for dinner and the dad locked him out of the house. Kid couldn't have been more than 8, 9 years old. He was crying and knocking at the door. The dad yelled at him to cut it out, that he needed to learn his lesson, show some respect. That boy just sat there, probably a few hours. A neighbor brought him a blanket and a sandwich, and someone must have called the police because when a couple squad cars came to the house, the dad stormed out, yelling at the police to get off his property, that they were trespassing, screaming at the neighbors to mind their own damn business. Then he turned around and walked right up to his son and slapped him so hard the boy fell over. When the police tried to subdue him, he took a swing at an officer. They had him handcuffed and in the back of a squad car before the boy was even up off the ground. They moved away the next month.
Chapter 20. I duck out of the backyard and through the neighbor's lawn and onto the street, my elbow wrapped tight in a cloth bandage. My hair is tucked into a baseball cap. My old-school wayfarers cover half my face. Resting my left hand on the handlebars, I grimace through the pain. Pedaling down Main Street, I figure I'm in the clear when I take the turn onto Old Route 72, heading straight to the Fabian Forest Preserve. A few cars whiz by. I gulp the air as the breeze hits my face. Despite my loaded backpack, I'm light, free from gravity's anchor. I cycle faster into my freedom, tiny beads of sweat popping up on my upper lip and brow, first hot, then cooled by the wind. I try not to think about what will happen when my parents discover I'm gone. My whole life is thinking. I don't want to think anymore. I push ahead, pedal harder. The wind blows off all my old, scorched feathers, and my new wings let me soar. The no trespassing sign in front of the Japanese garden eases me to a stop. I walk my bike around the skeletons of dead trees and desiccated vines onto the dirt path into the woods. Coming up on the stone cottage, I inhale the mossy loaminess, and my muscles relax for the first time in weeks, maybe months. I approach the entrance slowly. The door creaks on its hinges, opening to a dishearteningly empty room. I came here to be alone, but was secretly hoping I wouldn't be. It's early evening. The inside of the cottage is dusky as the fading light rests at the top of the trees. I fling my backpack onto the Lazy Boy and pull out its contents. A towel, my swimsuit, dry clothes, the sling for my stupid arm, a couple sandwiches, a book, charger, disposable contact lenses and saline, my glasses, a toothbrush, toothpaste, antibacterial gel, and my meds. But no camera. The police still have my minicam, and the other one adds too much weight. Sweaty from the bike ride, I dare myself to a quick solo swim. My arm throbs as I undo the bandage on my elbow and struggle into my bikini. The woods are more menacing than I remember. Of course they are. I've never been here this late before. Or alone. Tiny waves flutter over the surface of the pond. Phil's little blanket of beach awaits me. I leave my towel and sneakers on the sand and wade in up to my waist. Besides the slight stirring of the wind through the leaves, there are no sounds. I'm alone, literally, metaphorically, and in all the other ways I don't know quite how to name. I inch forward, urged on by the pond's lovely coolness against my bruised and tired skin, and a curiosity to see how far I will let myself go. The water ripples and arcs around my body as I creep forward. Swimming isn't an option with an injured elbow, but I might be able to float with my left arm resting on my stomach. I shouldn't drown. I'm 90% sure the odds are in my favor. With the water chest high, I push myself up and onto my back, my right arm bobbing at my side. Letting my neck relax, I open my eyes. I float in the delicious stillness of the world around me, briefly forgetting every moment that brought me to this one. A branch cracks in the distance. I pull myself to standing. Goosebumps cool my skin. The encroaching gloam calls me to shore. As I rush back to the cottage, the towel pulled tight around me, an imagined series of newspaper headlines appear in the air in front of me, light bulbs flashing and popping like a 1940s black-and-white crime scene, Humphrey Bogart smoking in the background. I run into the cottage and shut the door. No lock. Dripping across the warped wooden slats, I search the small back utility room for something to jam against the door. The old boards that Phil apparently uses for firewood aren't long enough to wedge between the doorknob and the floor. I scan the room. My eyes fall on the recliner. It's the heaviest thing in the cottage. I put my shoulder to the footrest of the chair and heave, grunting as I push the chair toward the door. With only a few feet to go, I look up and pause. Bathroom. Damn it! I pull a few tissues out of my backpack and step outside. In a matter of minutes, it will be completely dark, and once I secure the chair against the door, I can't imagine walking back out to pee, and I'm not about to go the Laura Ingalls Wilder nighttime bedpan route. So I go around to the back of the cottage, though no one is there to spy on me. I pull down my bikini bottom and squat, forcing myself to sing so I can relax enough to go. I allow myself a chuckle at this absurdity. Already missing the wonders of modern plumbing, I walk back to the cottage. Before I lodge the chair against the door, I pull the lever at the side to set it at full recline. The chair will be my desk, lock, bed, and entertainment center for the night, so I want to make it as comfortable as faux-cracked leather allows. Using only my good arm is awkward, but I stack firewood on the sills of the two windows that are missing their panes. With my rustic security system in place, I change out of my wet bikini, dry off, and pull on a t-shirt and yoga pants. The cottage is dark, but I find my way to the flashlight Phil keeps on the mantel. I hunt for the lantern and matches I spotted in the back room. The lantern is actually